shortage in the world. Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master both used to say that the world supplies enough of everything. There's enough of everything needed. The only shortage is a shortage of Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the Ishopanishad, we find Ishavasham idam sarvam yad kimcha jagatyam jagat tena jagtena punjita ma kridha kashusvitanam om purnam adha purnam idam purnat purnam udachate purnasya purnam adaya purnam idam shushate. The personality of Godhead is complete and his arrangements are also complete. He's made a complete arrangement for the complete maintenance of all the living beings. There's enough water, there's enough air, there's enough grains, there's enough land, there's enough of everything. We simply have to cooperate with Krishna's arrangement and there's no shortage. The problem is that we refuse to acknowledge, or we neglect to acknowledge, the real owner of everything. We set ourselves up as the owners of the proprietors of this land, this resource. We claim that this is mine, or it's ours, and it's not yours. And we fight over these, over who will be the one to control and own vastly more than needed. Vastly more than needed. The present world civilization, if it's worthy of the name, has created an artificial way of life based on falsity. I saw an item a couple of weeks ago that I suppose it was the Bank of England had been authorized to create how much? $75 billion in new money. They've been authorized to create new money.
Quantitative easing.
That's called quantitative easing. There's not enough quantity of money, so we just create more. What does it mean to create new money? It means to start up the press. That's how you create new money. You just print more. What is its actual value?
Its actual value
is nil. Well, I guess if you create enough new money, it's good for starting a fire someplace, but apart from that, it has no intrinsic value. It has value because we declare it to have value. Otherwise, it's not worth anything. And that sometimes happens, that you think you have this much, and then you wake up the next morning and you have half as much. Because the same paper has shot down in value. It had no real value to begin with. The real value, previously, a man in Vedic culture, a person is considered rich when? If he has land, grains, cows. Well, that's primitive, isn't it? Just to measure things in terms of land and number of cows someone has. But if you think about it, that's where the real value is. If you have land, you have a place to live, don't you? If you have land, you can grow food, can't you? And what are the main primary necessities for living? You need a place to stay, you need food. If you have cows, then you get milk, you get butter, you get cheese, you get cream, you get all those things. You even get fuel, because the cow dung can be used as very ecologically suitable low-cost fuel. And you get traction because you can use the animals to plow and do real work. Before someone came up with the idea of machines running on petroleum and requiring great factories to put together, Krishna had already put together a very good source of traction in the form of so many animals. We think that we're advancing, but we're advancing to such a situation that we don't have the real things that are worth something, and we have a lot of things that aren't worth anything, or that cause us trouble, in fact. Again, land is valuable. Grains are valuable. Water is valuable. Just a simple source of fresh, clean water is valuable. Where can you find that? We're busy wiping it off the face of the earth, or just adding the waste of our factories so that the water that Krishna has given to us, we spoil. Water is valuable. What's next? Air is valuable. We're doing a good job on that too. In some cities today, where you can buy a hit of air when you've been wandering the streets so long that you're ready to drop, inhaling the fumes of factories and car exhaust, you can pop into one of these oxygen shops and buy a little bit of air. Krishna has already provided these things in abundance. Air, water, land. Look at Krishna's arrangement. You put a seed in the land, and you add some of the water, which he also supplies. He supplies the water, he supplies the land, he supplies the seed. You do a little work, and you get food. Now, is that cool or not? You know, if you came up with something like that in Silicon Valley or in the city of London, you know, here they'd make you a knight or something. They'd give you a lordship. In America, they just make you a multimillionaire. But Krishna's already come up with such a great arrangement that these little seeds, which grow in the food themselves, when you get the food, you get the seeds. And you put them in the ground, and Krishna's already put all the stuff in the ground that the seeds need. And there's sunshine already provided also. Sunshine, water, land, seeds. And you get food and more food. So what do? We take the land and we grow tobacco. To spoil the land, because it's a weed, instead of growing grains, we grow weeds. That's smart, isn't it? And a pernicious weed that spoils the land, and while we're at it, spoils the lungs of the people who smoke the tobacco. But it's a multi-billion dollar industry. An industry of unnecessary necessity. Not only unnecessary, which is putting it too mildly, pernicious necessities. And to make the stimulate the economy, we have to make sure people buy a lot of these nasty little things so that we can go on spoiling the land and spoiling people's lungs. But the advanced countries are waking up. They're seeing that this is a very bad thing, that we're destroying the health of our people. And so we're going to restrict the sale of cigarettes in America and Europe, and open up the markets in India, Russia, China, and the rest of the third world. Well, this is what we do with what Krishna gives us. Krishna has given us wonderful arrangements by which everything we need is available. That's Krishna's arrangement. And we just have to accept it and live in accordance with Krishna's system of things, this arrangement of things, and use our energy for spiritual realization, which is the real purpose of life. The material side, by his arrangement, is not so hard. He has provided the necessary things. So we accept that and then go on to the real purpose. The real purpose of life is not just to get food and a place to stay. The real purpose is spiritual realization. We need food, we need a place to stay, but now let's get on with our business. Well, what are you doing with your life? Well, I have a place to stay and I have food. That's not the point. Those are the prelims. Those are the things that we need to get started with. But the goal is spiritual realization, ultimately being promoted from the material world and going back to the spiritual world, which is our real home. But instead, we neglect spiritual realization so that we have to stay here, and then we make here hellish. We create a civilization of intense competition over unnecessary things, nasty things, huge industries and huge nastiness, grand scale nastiness. A world of breweries and refineries and every kind of factory for what? For what? So, and then we falsely fight over it. We fight over all these false things. This is my petroleum. This is our petroleum. We invent all sorts of slogans like democracy, freedom, war on terror, clash of civilizations, blah, 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 blah. But it's really all about, I want what you've got and I'm going to take it. I'll kill you for it. So you have a choice. Either, you know, get out of our way or we'll get you out of our way so that we can grab more than our share. Dana Jagdana Bhumjita. Krishna, the Ishopanishad says everybody has a right to a fair share of what Krishna provides. There's enough for everyone. Just take your fair share. Madhridhatashvita, but don't take more. Don't be greedy. This is the special problem of human society. Srila Prabhupada points out that if you take a sack of grain and throw it in the middle of a field, the birds will come and each bird will take as much as he needs and go away. But a human being will come up with a truck and he'll, however many sacks you put there, he'll cart it off. You get people who've earned so much money that they can't figure out how to, they could not possibly figure out how to spend it all. How can you spend $30 million? What could you do to spend, you know, what, for yourself, your family, and you, 30, but no, if I have 30 million, I could double it and have 60. At that point, just the acquisition itself becomes the goal. It's not even to have something or have more of something. It's just to look at that bottom line and see it bigger becomes the goal in itself. What is this? So Srila Prabhupada called this a misdirected human civilization. A misdirected human civilization. Full of fighting and full of, well, now scarcity and difficulty because of an artificial civilization and an artificial way of life. Again, if you have land, cows, grain, you have substantial needs. If you have paper, and now we don't even have paper, we have debt. People are encouraged, what, we're stimulating the economy by going into debt. I get myself a credit card and I run up a debt to be paid at what, 18, 20, I don't even know what credit card debt is these days. What do they charge? About 20%, which in in the days of the ancient primitive peoples, was considered usury. It was considered immoral and illegal to charge that kind of money. Now it's just considered good business. So you buy something you don't need at 20% interest. And mostly what you're paying for is the privilege of borrowing. And then when your debt runs too high, you get a second credit card, and the bank will help you transfer your debt from this credit card to that credit card. Now you're loading up however many credit cards until you collapse, or the banks collapse on top of you. Because we get into an artificial mindset in which I need things that I don't need, and I spend what I don't have to get what I don't need, so that I can be in anxiety, and I can get things, you know, that's the other way that your bank takes your home away, your bank takes your whatever, sorry. You know. But it's an artificial way of life. The Vedic way of life is be satisfied. Be satisfied with less. Because if I want more, more is never enough to satisfy me. I'm not satisfied. I need more. And then when I get more, that's also not enough. It's something like satisfying a fire by putting more fuel on it. The more fuel you put on, the bigger the fire gets, and then the more it wants. So the Vedic culture is, don't agitate the mind with, if I had, then I could. Just calm down. Whatever we have, that's come by nature's arrangement. There's, by destiny, everyone gets something. By destiny, and you can't really change it. You can't really change it. Everyone, when our body is created, the arrangement for the body is created. Everyone will get a certain amount of food. Everyone will get a certain amount of land. Everyone will get a certain amount of everything. And we can fight and strive and this and that, and still, those who are destined to get rich will get rich. Those who are destined to get poor will get poor. Simple example. Who works hard to get misery? Who works hard to get misery? No one. And to whom does misery come? Everyone. Someone more, someone less. But misery comes to everyone. Uninvited, unsought, automatically. By nature's arrangement, because I have this body, a certain amount of misery will come to me. Someone will have a stomach problem. Someone will have a respiratory problem. Someone will have a liver problem. Someone will have a vision problem, an auditory problem, an overall problem, a muscle problem, a skeletal problem. Everybody gets his own share, and some people get more, some people get less, some people get this one, some people get that one. It comes with the body. And no one looks for it, but it comes anyway. So if misery comes automatically in a certain proportion, why not happiness? If the material misery is coming automatically, why won't happiness come automatically? It will. It will. It does. A certain amount of happiness, or the stuff that makes us happy, will come, whether we push and fight and scheme for it, or just relax. Yeah, we have to work, that's all right. But it's not that by more endeavor, more and more will come to be, and I'll be more and more happy. Doesn't work that way. Rather, we get a society in which there's greater and greater anxiety, and in which things backfire, in which we make life more convenient by making cars, but then you can't breathe. which we, well, so many things, but you can give as many examples as I could. So the Vedic way of life is just be satisfied. Do some simple work and be satisfied with what Krishna gives and live simply. Because the happiness that comes from living with greater complication or with greater, the greater setup, a greater enterprise, is not greater than the happiness that we get from living simply, simply. So that's, what are some of the things we don't need? Right off the top, we don't need alcohol. Very expensive stuff. Responsible for more of the traffic accidents, homicides, domestic quarrels, and medical complications than you could count. We could save billions of dollars for the National Health Service, for the traffic people, and so on, just by eliminating one simple unnecessary thing. And you recover so much land also, because the land is being used to grow whatever it is they're making the alcohol out of. And it's all unnecessary, and worse than unnecessary, bad. Alcohol, tobacco, meat eating. We don't need to kill animals to live. We won't die if we don't sink our teeth into a piece of flesh. We can live very nicely. Grains, fruits, milk products, vegetables. Krishna's provided all of these things. We don't need to kill animals to survive. We don't need to construct horrible slaughterhouses to torture Krishna's creatures. There'll be no karma for that. And economically speaking, it's more cost effective to eat the grains yourself than to feed them to the animals and kill them and eat their skin. The amount of just water, just to count one thing, that's wasted in slaughterhouse industry is huge. Well, gambling, another thing, just wastes people's lives. Agitate people's minds. I could win. And it's supposedly that even the state sponsors lotteries and then to use the money for education and blah, blah, blah. But who buys the lottery tickets? The people who most need the state help. People in the lower rung of society are the ones who can't figure out that with odds of 10,000 to 1, despite the picture of Mrs. Murphy, who won £3 billion in the lottery, I'm just throwing my money away. And I need the money if I'm living in subsistence. So it's cheating. After taking away so much money by tax, and whatever money's left, the state can start pulling that out, sucking that out of people by games of chance. Another unnecessary thing. These four things, yatradharma and chaturvidha, gambling, meat eating, illicit sex. That's another one that, around the corner from us, there's lots of going on. What is it for? To agitate people's minds? So that those who are already dissatisfied can become more dissatisfied. Agitate the mind so that it becomes. You've got an itch and you scratch it. What happens? It gets itchier. So you've got a whole industry here, which is an itch scratching industry. And what happens? The itch gets worse, which is good for business, but not good for anyone's well-being. And then along with all of that, every kind of nasty things go on. Well, who's going to be happy by meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication? No one. And people instead, they could come here and chant Hare Krishna for free. Spending so much money around the corner to agitate the mind, they'd become more crazy. And come here, chant Hare Krishna, and at no cost, be peaceful, be happy, and eat nicely too. By cooperating with Krishna's arrangement. We don't need bars and brothels and big, big industries. Chant Hare Krishna. Spend some time discussing topics concerning Krishna. Little philosophy. And offer some nice food to Krishna and accept Krishna's kindness as prasadam, food that's his mercy. It's such a nice way of life by which the mind becomes peaceful, the mind becomes purified. Cheap. In a time when everyone's worried about scarcity, this is free enjoyment, natural enjoyment, and enjoyment that brings us closer to the real purpose of our life. The mad civilization of artificial necessities and artificial wars is a rascal civilization, a demonic civilization. And real civilization is a civilization in which we cultivate spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, following the directions given by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, given in the Vedic literature. It's not simply pie in the sky, sentimentalism. The Vedic literature is giving the right directions for practical life, how to be happy, how to be healthy, how to be satisfied in life, and how to have the highest purpose in life and achieve it. How to have real wealth in society. How to understand the real owner of things, how to get out of the illusion, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is ours, this isn't theirs. And understand that everything belongs to Krishna. We also have a right to share in Krishna's property, but we don't have a right to take more and more just to increase. The world is in trouble, therefore, only because of a shortage of this one thing. Only because of a shortage of Krishna consciousness. The world is in trouble, and individually we're in trouble for a shortage of Krishna consciousness. Everything else we have, really, it's there all around us. But Krishna consciousness is in shortage, and therefore the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement is to create real wealth. Not revving up the press and printing papers, but to not even create. The real wealth is already there. Within you, there's so much wealth in the form of Krishna consciousness. Within every one of us, this wealth is there. We only have to mine it. And it's not mining with nasty machines and ripping up the earth. It's mining by this Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Take advantage of this movement of Krishna consciousness and be eternally wealthy in relationship to Krishna. Thank you very much. Some questions?
The rules of karma are not so helpful to rectify the living entity.
especially in this present day and age, because the performing activities are not quite sure whether it's right or wrong to their next life. In the next life, they can't remember what they did to get the reaction.
Someone claims that the laws of karma are not very helpful for rectifying the living entities, because we're not quite sure what to do or what not to do, and then we get the results of the next life, and then we really don't know. Therefore, we have these books like Bhagavad Gita. You can know. It's not just a question that we're in difficulty due to ignorance. Just like, why get into very abstract ideas? Fire burns. That's karma. You put your hand in the fire, your hand will get burned. You can complain, well, that's not very helpful. That's not a very good arrangement. But why does our hand get burned? Because we're ignorant. We don't know that this is fire, and if I put my hand in, I'll get burned. So then what do we need? We need knowledge. That if I put my hand in the fire, it will get burned. If I eat food which is contaminated, I'll get diseased. If I do this, there'll be that. This is good. And then extended, it gets more subtle. If I do things that are against the laws of nature that I'm not aware of, that will have consequences. Or positively, if I act in cooperation with nature, there'll be good results. So it's education. I have to get knowledge. That's the need of human society. There's enough of everything, not enough knowledge, especially spiritual knowledge. As you blame the world for being set up wrong. Yes, something else? There was another question. I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
I'm not sure. She's saying something about going to the moon and then coming back.
Going to the moon and coming back?
Yes.
A yogi.
In the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. If you go to the moon and come back, then you can advertise, I went to the moon and came back.
Yes.
But you're back. So it's whether you're on the moon or here, chant Hare Krishna and make your life successful. Another question.
What do you say to people who just say, "Well, I'm just a good person. I just, don't give me anything about religion. I'm a good person, and I do good to others, and I think good things, and I think positive thoughts." Don't push your stuff onto me. I just want to be good to
take it or leave it. You're a good person. You just want to be good. But what is good? Do you know what is good? First of all, do you know who you are? If you don't know who you are, how do you know what's good for yourself? If you don't know who others are, how do you know what's good for them? There's the story of the lady who's keeping a bird in the cage and shining the cage and not feeding the bird. Well, that was nice of her. So we're taking care of the body, but we're neglecting the person within the body. How good is that? Don't push your thing on me. Okay, die.
As it's a work colleague, so I'm not sure if I can say it as
well.
But yeah, good one.
Something else? Yes.
I read in chapter 10 Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna mentions about his offenses that he is, for example, let's say, of beasts, he is the lion, and of fishes, he is the shark. Now, in what way are we to meditate on
Krishna says, I'm beasts, I'm the lion, the fishes, I'm the shark, and so on. How are we supposed to meditate? It means whatever's most, whatever's the greatest in any category represents Krishna. That's the idea. Krishna says, yajya vibhuti mat sattvam srimad rujitame bhava tattale bhava gachatvam mamatejvam sasandhava. Whenever you see anything great, you know, people are not impressed by Bhagavad Gita or by spirituality or all these Hare Krishnas with their chanting part, but they're impressed by a big mountain, or they're impressed by Niagara Falls, or they're impressed by a big bear. So Krishna says, or they're impressed by, wow, did you see her? So Krishna says, whenever you see anything that's beautiful or powerful or wonderful, then you can think that this is just coming from a little spark of my energy. If the girl is beautiful, how beautiful is Krishna, from whom millions and billions of girls are coming? If a mountain is impressive, how impressive is Krishna, from whom all the mountains are coming? That's the idea. Something else?
Yes. Obviously, when you're selfish for something material, it can harm other devotees, other jivas, and you disrespect what Krishna has given you. But what about being spiritually selfish?
When we're selfish for material things, obviously we cause harm to others. What about being spiritually selfish? What is your idea of spiritually selfish?
Just, I guess, greed for Krishna, I guess.
Greed for Krishna. Well, that's good greed. To be greedy for Krishna consciousness doesn't hurt anyone. And rather, it benefits the greedy person. Greed is fine, just be greedy for the right thing. And the nice thing about Krishna consciousness is that there's no shortage, it doesn't run out. And even when you get a lot of it, you can share it. And what happens when you share it? Your stock increases. It's not like material things where you get a certain amount and then whatever you share is no longer yours. But if you stock up on Krishna consciousness and share it, your stock increases.
There's a story of Dhruva.
Of Dhruva?
Yeah, yes. His pride was hurt. His child's pride was hurt. And because of that, he wanted to be worshipped Krishna. So it seems to me like maybe it doesn't really matter why you worship Krishna. Some people might worship Krishna for material things or psychological things.
Yes, Krishna. The history of Dhruva is that he was a little child and he was insulted, and he was so insulted that he wanted to get a big kingdom, and so he worshipped Krishna for that. So then, isn't it okay that it seems like any reason you come to Krishna consciousness, either for pride or for wealth or for psychological reasons or whatever, is good for material acquisition? And the answer is that any way that we get started is good. Whether it's because I think that I'll get more wealthy by becoming Krishna conscious, or I think I'll become more healthy, I think that I'll satisfy some curiosity that I have, or I'll get knowledge, or I have a problem, I'm distressed about something, I could solve that problem if I approach God. Any reason that we head off into the direction of God consciousness is good. But then it's not ultimately good to stick with that. When Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom, and finally he saw Krishna and he got a kingdom. And then he was lamenting, I was so stupid that I had the opportunity to come in touch with Krishna, and what did I want from him? A rinky-dink kingdom. instead of wanting him and his association, I wanted a kingdom. It's like approaching a wealthy man and asking for a few grains of rice. So in the beginning, to be whatever gets us going, whatever will inspire us to approach God or Krishna, that's good. But then if we take a legitimate process, a bona fide, authentic process for developing our God consciousness, the result will be that we'll lose interest in those things. Then we just want Krishna. And then our life becomes perfect. Another question? Yes?
Just taking on from that discussion about being spiritually selfish, I just had a thought in my mind. I was sitting here and people standing at the back. I had a thought in my mind, should I give up the place and let somebody else sit here? But obviously I didn't. So I don't know whether I'm being spiritually selfish and right way or not.
Well, you're spiritually stuck in the front row. It would be very hard. Your tax for being in the front row is you have to go out and tell a whole lot more people about Krishna. Anyone else have a question? Okay, it's yours.
Am I right, John? I have read Ishu Prabhupada's books, especially in the second canto, chapter 9, verse 35 in the purport, when Krishna gave the instruction to Lord Brahma, Tapa. Ishu Prabhupada explains as Krishna's words.
Internal energy just means Krishna's spiritual energy. There's the external energy and the internal energy. The external energy consists of basically temporary stuff. The stuff that people are fighting over, or even our own bodies are temporary. So that's called the external energy or the material energy. And then there's the internal energy, which is Krishna's spiritual energy, consisting of that which is full of knowledge and blissful and lasting forever. And then there's us, we're the called marginal energy, we're in between. That means we can look toward the material energy or we can look toward the spiritual energy, toward the external energy or the internal energy. So the Bhagavad Gita emanates from Krishna's internal energy, means it's spiritual sound. So by hearing or reading the words of Bhagavad Gita, we're turning toward the spiritual energy, which means we're automatically turning away from the entanglement in the material energy. We're becoming liberated. Anuvritti Shabdat, Vedanta said, one becomes liberated by sound. So that this Maha Mantra chanting means liberation by sound. All anxieties, all entanglements, all problems. It's not theoretical. Actually, every problem will be solved when we take up chanting Hare Krishna. That's a fact. Why? Because it's spiritual sound. On the spiritual platform, there are no problems. On the platform of eternity, problems disappear. It's on the platform of temporality and ignorance and misery that there are so many difficulties. But when we come to the blissful, spiritual, eternal platform, problems, where did they go? But this chanting is the method to come to that spiritual platform, to become situated in Krishna's internal energy.